Welcome to today's episode on Life in the Front Office. I'm your host, Jake Hirschman. Excited for today's guest in Avish Sood, co-founder of Sponsorship Space and brand manager at Clorox. And we're going to dive into a little bit of the entrepreneurial space, the perspectives of being with a brand in the sports space, sponsorship space. And we'll talk a little bit about kind of just the lens that Avish sees things through. Also being across the border in Canada as well, seeing it in a different country as sports is truly a global entertainment product. So Avish, welcome to the podcast.
Jake, appreciate it, man. Excited to chat and talk a little bit and learn more about you as well.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things is, you know, we've had plenty of guests on this podcast across many of the industries, and I have to say, we haven't had too many from the brand space. And it's a totally different perspective. It's a unique position to sit in, as we've had many people in the sponsorship world on here trying to sell sponsorships. You are buying and actually spending money as opposed to selling. So just let's start off with how you got to where you are and a little bit of your journey.
Yeah, sure. So at the University of Toronto, I went to school, I was studying accounting, and I quickly realized accounting wasn't my calling. I wasn't that passionate about it. And I got a chance to actually get a subsidy to go to a conference at MIT. So it was the MIT Sports Analytics Conference. Saw it, and I was like, whoa, that's really cool. I didn't know sports was an option as a career. So I came back, and with a couple friends, we started our own conference, trying to get students engaged in the world of sports marketing at U of T. And we said, you know what, let's give it a shot. Let's try to build something, be a little entrepreneurial, because, you know, I can't take another accounting class without something to drive me outside of it. So we ended up starting that, and it exposed me a little bit to the world of sponsorship, because I got a chance, you know, in my second year as I was planning that conference, to go meet with the CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. And it started from a cold call email. And I had sent him a note asking if he wanted to go for a coffee. And he responded, and he was basically, when I did meet him, the most humble guy, you know, took a lot of time to get to know me. And then at the end of the conversation, he's just like, so what are you looking for? And, you know, University Me had a sponsorship package that I created from Microsoft Word. And I just let him know that I'd love for him to be a sponsor of the event. And they ended up being the first sponsor of this conference that never existed before. So for us, it was a huge deal. But for me personally, it actually got an opportunity for me to get closer to work with the Toronto Blue Jays partnership marketing team, their marketing staff, their graphic designers, and working with them to understand a little bit more about what it takes for the Jays and a team like that to attach their name to a conference like the one we were running. So it actually led me to an opportunity at the Toronto Blue Jays as a sponsorship intern a little bit later on. And, you know, I didn't ever expect for that to be my career path. But, you know, after I worked at the Jays, I quickly realized, you know, I really love marketing. I love sponsorship, and I enjoy how brands are working together with a lot of teams and properties to expand their goals. So from there, I actually got an opportunity to go to the Toronto Pan Am Games, which was, you know, a huge life-changing experience for me, because, you know, it was the first time an event of that scope was ever being held in Toronto. And to be on the organizing committee, I was really fortunate in the sense that, you know, they were attracting a certain amount of sponsorship revenue, but we had actually met our goal for the year, and we wanted to surpass it. But at the same time, we were a little bit stringent on, or not stringent, we were a little bit tight on the amount of resources we had. So as a coordinator, I was given a lot of opportunity by a few mentors on my team there to really just go out and start selling sponsorships. And it opened my doors to really learn about, you know, trial and error of, like, you know, figuring out your way in the sponsorship industry. And I thought for me personally, that really built a level of confidence that I didn't have before. And it actually opened up some more opportunities after that contract. So, you know, from the Blue Jays to the Pan Am Games, I went over after that as a sponsorship manager for the Canadian National Exhibition. And so between all of those roles, I was building a little bit of expertise with a project that I was building as a social community called the Sponsorship Space. So I really channeled in and laser focused my understanding of marketing within sponsorship specifically. And because of that, it led me to a lot of different opportunities. So as I was thinking about, you know what, how do I become a better sponsorship marketer in general? I wanted to understand, you know, what does it look like from a sales perspective, but at the same time, how do brands actually leverage sponsorships on their side? And how do I become someone who's actually a decision maker of whether or not it makes sense to invest in a sponsorship as part of a greater marketing package? So I had an opportunity to go to Brita, which is owned by the Clorox company. And I was there for about 2.5 years working on the water filtration category. And we had partnerships with the Toronto Blue Jays, the Raptors, Me to We, which is a charity here in Canada. And then, you know, from there, I actually got an opportunity to move to the cleaning business. So obviously this year has been a crazy roller coaster ride for our company in general. And, you know, I got an opportunity to be a brand manager on the cleaning category, which I didn't ever think that I would be as excited about as I really am. But that's because, you know, you're really getting to reinvent a category that, you know, for 100 years has meant one thing, but, you know, as soon as a pandemic hits and you become an essential product and essential service, it really opens your eyes to the opportunity you can have as a marketer. And I thought it was such a awesome opportunity for me. So that was kind of the process, and that's where I am right now. But the idea was, as a sponsorship marketer, how can I take the experience that I had on the property side, develop those skills, and then actually learn from the brand marketing world and apply them both into becoming a better marketer?
No, it's fantastic. And, you know, you mentioned something in your experience with the Pan Am Games where you talked about confidence. And I want to go back to that because I think that's, it's huge in a variety of ways, right? If you are selling a sponsorship, not only do you have to have confidence in your product, but you have to have confidence in yourself to sell, and confidence in your ability to build that relationship. On the flip side, you've got to have confidence that whatever you're spending money on and that relationship that you've built with the property is going to work, right? And there's a lot that goes into it. Maybe you could touch on kind of just how you go about that process, the data, the analytics side, maybe along with the ideation, the creativity, and kind of starting from scratch a lot of times to get to that place.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, with the Pan Am Games, it's an opportunity that an organizing committee has in the city and the country that they're in to really get corporate Canada, in our case, on board with the event, right? And so for us, you know, we didn't really have to worry too much about renewals. So the analytics side wasn't like a huge priority in terms of my coordinator role. But I think where I got a real cool opportunity was, you know, supporting a lot of the sales managers that we had, two sales managers at the time, supporting them in terms of making the decks for deals that would range from, you know, a few $100,000 to over 10 million. And you would get an opportunity to understand, you know, for each category, what is it that we're trying to leverage and utilize in terms of our trademarks, our rights, and offer that opportunity to a brand, you know, whether that be a Cineplex in our case or a Porter Airlines. There's so many different industries that may have heard a little bit about the games, but they didn't necessarily know everything about what we were trying to sell. So that's where us as, you know, a sales coordinator and a sales manager would come in and start to think about their category and understand what their objectives were at the time, but also find creative ways for them to support us. So for example, like a lot of people look at sponsorships as a straight cash deal, right? And just as important in that regard is the value in kind contra deals. And so, you know, when I first started working as a sales coordinator, you know, I was supporting a lot. But I think at some point down the road, I was given the opportunity to start selling, but my focus became, how do I get smaller, easier wins for the organization when it comes to saving budget, right? And so for us, I was looking at categories with, you know, our medical team, if they were spending a certain amount of dollars on, you know, healthcare equipment or optometrist equipment, categories you wouldn't necessarily think of generally. It allowed me an opportunity to be a little more creative to say, you know, this is a category that we're spending a lot of money. Do we really have to procure all those items, or could we go down the path of a sponsorship and work with the company to allow us to save, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars in expenses? So for me, I think the confidence came, you know, as I started to think about creativity in ways we could sell, it allowed me to kind of open the doors to what's possible in the world of sponsorship outside of just a straight cash for rights sort of partnership.
Absolutely. And even in like in the athletic space, you know, when I was at Purdue, you know, you go and get the restaurant partner, right? That's going to provide all your pregame meals for all the media, all the, you know, if you went as far as even potentially the team, depending on the nutrition aspect of it, right? There's a lot of different ways to get involved, save that budget as you were talking about. And, you know, now you see the likes of, you know, obviously Gatorade's been in the game for a long time, but, you know, your Body Armors or your Muscle Milks and those types of, you know, brands that are getting in the space because they want to be the product that the athlete's drinking right after they're done working out, right? Or whatever the case might be. And again, a lot of different ways and unique creativity. So let's talk about the sponsorship space, because that's an area that you've been able to create where a lot of people can learn from what's going on around them. You're, you know, as working at the Pan Am Games or where you are right now with Clorox, like you're only learning necessarily your specific space and your area, but there's so much going on around us. There's so much out there to learn, and there's just only 24 hours in a day. So trying to understand the landscape and learn from others and learn from other industry executives, how do you pull that all together?
Yeah. So early on when I was interning with the Jays and I was working at Pan Am, like I realized that I loved, you know, learning about different categories, but being not necessarily an expert in every single one, but working with them to understand what their challenges were. And so, you know, if I was working with a construction company or I was working with a consumer packaged goods company, they both had unique challenges, but I could learn from every experience they had. So when I started the sponsorship space, it was more of an idea of how can we empower people, especially at the lower levels, to think like that and to learn from different categories, different challenges, different career paths, and how can we create a social area to connect a lot of those people, especially globally, but then also share some of the best practices so that, you know, me as a student, if I ever wanted to learn about a world of sponsorship and marketing in that regard, like I don't need to spend $1,000 to go to a conference. Instead, I can do due diligence and follow the right accounts and actually think about it in the lens of where can I gather as much information so I can be a better marketer in general. So the hope was, and you know, we've been doing this for the last 4 years now, is create that safe space for people to learn from each other. And also empower and spotlight the people at the younger stages so that they can have a platform to continue with their careers.
Yeah, you mentioned 4 years. I mean, it obviously had to start somewhere, and you've continued to build, and it's, you know, taken, I'm sure, a right when you thought it might take a left. And talk a little bit just about the process of continuing to stick with it and grow it and build it over time.
Yeah, you just got to stay positive in a lot of ways and see what it is that people value, right? So when you put out a piece of content, it's not necessarily going to give you the analytics right away, but over time, you're going to understand, okay, well, you know, the people that are starting to follow this are all in the certain demo, right? So if it's sponsorship specific content, you know, I'm getting a lot of people that are following as a salesperson in sponsorship. So what can I do to make their lives a little bit better as I think about our content offering? And I think for us as an organization, you know, we're really focused on, you know, providing that connection of people so that they can learn from each other and continue to network. But at the same time, you know, the content that we're featuring usually is, you know, best practices that we're taking from all over the world. So in general, I know that a lot of salespeople are looking for ways to sharpen their toolkit, to meet the right people. By offering some of those things and putting that content out there, we slowly started to become a lot more niche in the product offering that we had. And we found that the value and the engagements we were getting, you know, people started to really appreciate it. And I would get messages saying like, I love what you're doing. How can I help? And I think when I hear those things and I can see the impact it's making, especially on people starting their careers, it gets me thrilled to actually continue to do more. So the process is never easy. You have to incur costs. You have to do things that you might not want to do. But if your goal, which in my case it is really to help others in the sense of expanding their career in the world of marketing, you know, starting your own organization like this is something that you can learn so much about others and how you're helping them, but at the same time, how you're helping yourself in the terms of your development and your passion for helping others.
And helping others is key because, you know, look, you don't know who that person is that you somehow engaged with your content and started to follow you. And then 5 years down the road, you're sitting across the table from them doing a deal, right? Sure. And you don't know how that might help be able to help you in the long run as well. And as you think about those, and you know, the things that everyone asks, you know, what did you wish you had right when you started? Or what did you wish you knew when you started out? And those are some of the things that as you continue to try and help people, those are things that, you know, quite frankly, people can't just think about and go ask for. They just all of a sudden appear because someone wanted to help others, right? And it's not this product that they got to go pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for. It's just simply people trying to do good for others.
And I think the key, man, is that if you come across in a genuine way and you're not like, I think, you know, you want to make sure that you're really doing work that's supportive of others, but not in a way that's like, okay, well, that's going to help me get, you know, my career forward. And I think, you know, because I've kind of stayed rooted in, you know, what is the goal of this whole like social community and organization? Like, I don't need to necessarily always be the face of it, but I feel that the impact that something else is creating for others is really important. And I can see that. And so part of the reason why I didn't put my name as like, you know, the podcast or like the social community, I didn't want to post the content all on my feed. I wanted it to be bigger than just me. And I think, you know, when you think about those kind of things, that's one of the takeaways I took away from this whole experience is like, how can I genuinely build something that is outside, you know, whether or not I'm involved?
No, that's great. And, you know, you think about how the podcast you're on right now got started, and really it was to give back, you know, from an advice and insights perspective to help those, you know, look, be exposed, be aware of the things that are out there that you can get involved in. As you mentioned, you started, you didn't know that sports was a career. And there's so many aspects to this industry. You sit behind a brand right now and people would look at your title or, you know, what you do and go, well, he doesn't work in sports. Yeah, he does, right? And there's so many different aspects to working in the industry as a whole that a lot of people don't realize starting out. And to shine a light on, as you mentioned, people and giving them a platform to show what they're doing, talk about what they're doing, and be able to relate in different perspectives. That's what we're all about. And so I want to go to one point in the sense of being with a brand and understanding, you know, just what a brand represents, right? It sounds simple, and you talked about marketing and being passionate about marketing, but to you, what does a brand represent?
That's a deep question. what does a brand represent? I feel like, you know, there's a human connection and a psychology behind marketing, right? And so when you think about a brand that you're building or a brand that's existed for 100 years, the mentality sometimes is a little different in how the end product looks. But I think, you know, why a lot of brands succeed at what they do is that they really create something that is providing a value to others that's very distinguishable, right? So if you think about, you know, for my example, Clorox is providing, disinfecting products to people that might need it in certain stages of their life, right? If you think about, any type of brand, they could be providing entertainment, they could be providing, support when it comes down to from the nonprofit side. Like there's so many different elements and roots to what a brand represents. But I think once you define what the purpose of that brand really is, it becomes so easy for someone to say, yes, I want to support that as an entity. And I see myself, you know, fitting in with their community, right? And so when you think about, you know, what you're doing as a brand owner, as a brand builder, you're really trying to build a community of people that are using your products for a way to make their lives better. And if I can figure out, you know, how Clorox intersects with people's lives and how it can be used to make their lives better, that's kind of, you know, how I look at brands in general. No matter what category you're working on, you have a purpose to support the people that are buying your products or you want to buy your products. So hopefully that answers your question.
No, that was great. That was great. You took the deep question and took it to another level. So that was great. I think when you talk about sitting on the other side of the table, right, being able to get creative, work on deals, figure out different ways to connect with people, with fans, whatever it might be, you know, what are some of the challenges that some may not realize sitting at that brand table would have?
Well, in general, right now, I'll give you an example. We're supply constrained in a way, right? So there's a huge increase in demand for the amount of products, especially disinfecting wipes. And, when you're thinking about it from our lens, you know, you don't want to push forward too much marketing without having product that people are going to purchase at the end of the day, right? So if you're pushing a message, and so, for example, if I'm advertising online and then it's driving to a website where there's no products available, you're really angering the people that in that consumer journey. So a lot of people would just assume that, you know what, like Clorox, you know, it's doing pretty well in terms of revenue this year. So with the demand of wipes, you know, if you're supply constrained, do you really want to put forward a lot of marketing dollars? So that's one thing that, you know, I've been kind of trying to think through my head is, you know, if you are in a situation like that, you know, not everyone would see that, but at the same time, from a brand level, you've got to do what's right for the consumer and what's right for people in general. So if we are constrained, how do we prioritize hospitals? How do we prioritize long-term care facilities? In terms of receiving our products. And I think that's the kind of thought process that you want to think about when you're in that kind of situation. So for us, it's more, how do we take this global brand that people love, that people are looking for currently right now, and make sure we're not, you know, in a way disappointing them in terms of, you know, where our product is right now. So that's kind of something that I've been trying to think through is like, you know, if there's out of stocks or if there's social and digital marketing like creative going on, how do we make sure that it's leaving a positive impact on the people that see it? And how do we, you know, look at the challenges that we're faced, because every brand right now, no matter who you are, has some challenge. And how do you look at it and then try to figure out how to make the people that are using your brand their lives better, right?
Well, and that brand first impression is so important. Maybe someone's never used, hey, it's possible, and someone's never used a disinfectant wipe before, right? But when they go to buy that first one, how do you make sure that that first impression, that that consumer journey, as you mentioned, is as impactful as you want it to be so that they stay loyal to your brand?
Yeah, I mean, you got to make sure, obviously, your product is there for them, right? And the experience is positive. You want to make sure that if it's their first time using it, you know, they're either enjoyed their experience or they, you know, it solved the purpose that they were trying to do. I think at the end of the day, you just want to make sure that whatever that differentiator is with your product, with your brand, people see that as soon as they use the product and are left with a positive emotion. And if you can make that happen, in general, you can build loyalty over time, but it's not something that, you know, might just happen with one use of disinfecting wipes at the first time. It's something that you want to keep, you know, ensuring that consumers are taking the right and positive emotions away from their experience in general.
Avish, as we start to wrap up this episode, we'll get to the rapid fire, but one more question before we get there. You know, as you think about your journey starting on the property side and ultimately making your way to the brand side, what's one thing that the properties across the country, across Canada, et cetera, need to be thinking about in terms of how they approach brands a little bit differently moving forward into 2021?
In general, I do believe that you have to really dig deep into what each brand is doing in terms of their marketing communications. If you just go as a salesperson to each different brand that you feel has money at the time, but don't put the thought and effort into thinking why this will actually benefit their bottom line sales or their brand equity or the things that they're looking for out of a sponsorship, you know, it's not going to work out well in this landscape. So, you know, as you think about approaching brands across any different industry, you want to make sure you're very well rooted into why this will actually help a brand in terms of the objectives that they have. And sometimes I found that it was very effective to just, you know, look at the TV commercials they were running or the digital campaigns they were running and try to understand what it is they were trying to solve related to their business and take that information and then build something out that made sense to help them solve that. And I think, you know, it's, we've moved past the whole rink board signage and, you know, in stadium signage as like the major marquee reason for a sponsorship. Now it's being forced to be creative and ownable when it comes to the brand messaging and making sure that whatever brand is investing in that property, there's a clear-cut reason for that.
Oh, that's great. All right, let's rapid fire. Toronto, you got Maple Leafs or Raptors?
Raptors.
Blue Jays or whom else? What's the go-to team? What's the
Toronto FC? Toronto FC?
Sure.
Okay, so I'll take the Jays.
Jays, all right.
Yep.
Favorite sport growing up?
Basketball.
All right, if you had to play basketball professionally, what position would you play?
Shooting guard, but I'm not a great shooter, but shooting guard.
Yeah, you're not the assist guy on the at the top of the point.
No, I am, but I also like
you like the ball.
I don't know. I'm like a Lamar Odom style player, so yeah, I can do a little bit of everything, but not anything amazingly.
Okay, favorite player growing up?
John Stockton.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Biggest difference between Canada and the U.S. It could be food. It could be anything.
Biggest difference. And I don't know. We have, that's such a hard question, man. Don't make, I'm skipping this one. I don't like it. It's election year. I'm skipping this question.
All right. We'll take that one out. Best part about living in Toronto?
The diversity. Everybody is very, you know, everyone's an immigrant for the most part. So I think it's like very easy to absorb the diversity here. And if you ever come visit, you'll see it right away.
You know, you think back to your university experience at University of Toronto. What was the best part about that experience for you?
I got to play basketball a lot at the local athletic center. So that was always fun. I'd say it forced me out of my comfort zone, because when I found out that, you know, my grades weren't as amazing as some of the people in my program, it forced me into thinking creatively about how I can stand out in the recruiting process. And that was by creating the conference. That was by, you know, following my passions. And sometimes when you're put in a situation where you're not doing that well, like you're forced to think on your feet. And I think U of T taught me that.
That's great. Least favorite part about accounting?
All of it. Taxes, taxes. It always comes to the taxes.
No one likes taxes. All right.
No.
Last question for you. You know, as you think about what sponsorship space has become, what is it in 2 to 3 years?
It's a global social community helping empower people who want to learn about sponsorship.
Awesome. Avish, appreciate your perspectives, insights, thoughts, and really enjoyed learning about your journey and the lens that you see sponsorships through.
Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it, man. And I hope to do this again sometime.